This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 401 for November 30th of 2017. The all-new Wrangler is a Jeepster for you love. Welcome to Autoland After Hours at the LA Auto Show. We got a terrific show coming up, by the way. Gary, talk about our guests.
All right, so we have the all-new Jeep Wrangler. So we have Mark Allen, who is the head of design for Jeep, and we have Scott Tallon, who is the head of marketing for Jeep. And these guys know all about this all-new vehicle.
They do, and in the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by Tony Caroga from Car and Driver Magazine and Aaron Gold, a noted
absolutely
automotive journalist. And we'll be back right after this. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
All right, we've got Scott Tallon, the head of marketing for Jeep. We've got Mark Allen, the head of design for Jeep. Gary and I are going to take a deep dive into what this new Wrangler is all about. Mark, let's start with you. How did you guys start out? I mean, you got an icon. The biggest rule of thumb is don't screw it up.
I've heard that all day today. It was really simple. We got out a piece of paper and started making lists and listening. We've actually worked on the vehicle straight for like 2.5, going on 3 years, but we've been working on it for really 10. We've been listening and watching. You know about my going out to Moab every year. I bring vehicles. So I'm testing vehicles. I'm testing things that I like to do. But more importantly, I'm taking people with me that have never been off-road, but they work on a Jeep. Well, what I need is their understanding. And that's what we've been working on, taking them out there, getting them to understand the vehicle, how it works and why, and immerse them in the Jeep culture, and it pays off.
So these are team members that are on your staff?
Yes, or on other staffs. They work on the user experience or the interior, or even we get some of the people from the planning groups. But I need them to understand the vehicle. It's so different than anything else that we do or that anybody else does, really. It's not a car. I hate when they call it an SUV. It's not a truck. It's a Wrangler. It's a Jeep. So as long as I have everybody understanding what we're trying to do, it's a lot easier to get the job done. This vehicle, for us, although we held true to the traditional styling of it, which was kind of a mantra up front, we tried all the weird things, but we didn't want to put those in production. But it was a lot easier to get done what we wanted to do, fix the door handles and the top and make the Rubicon tougher, all that stuff. So it was important to get understanding throughout everybody.
Scott, you must have been very concerned about what these guys are up to, since this is such an important vehicle for the whole Jeep brand.
I'm not sure I would say I'm concerned. I mean, in Mark's capable hands, I had tremendous confidence. I mean, the sheet metal is something that, you know, no one's going to do better. And then Mark, yeah, he clearly, you know, did the vehicle justice. And I don't think we could be any happier right now. I think that the final design, where we landed, in spite of all the wackiness that they looked at and everything else, was couldn't be any more perfect. I mean, it is probably as true to the original as any predecessor before this new Wrangler.
Do you get a lot of letters from people saying, don't change anything?
Yeah, absolutely. There's always the purists.
Letters anymore. Oh, okay,
emails. How about email? Or Facebook or whatever. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of feedback. You know, Mark talked about our owners, and that's who really drives the direction of where we're going with the next generation of Wrangler. Where do we find those areas of improvements? And you know, Moab is a great test bed for us, but we also get to interact with tens of thousands of other Jeep owners that have modified their Jeeps in ways that maybe the aftermarket didn't see, or they had a need with their vehicle, and then they incorporate it. Just the conversations you have, it's not that casual. We're always learning and gathering that feedback. And also, we have a huge social media following, too. And to hear their voice and their passion about what they want to see in the current and future Wranglers, we had a lot to live up to, but no, I wasn't concerned with Mark's design.
Appreciate the confidence.
Yeah.
Mark was studying this for 10 years.
Yes.
Longer, honestly. But
Longer than that. So what was your list? What did you set out to do from a marketing standpoint?
Well, from a marketing standpoint, very similar. I mean, you know, we have to stay true and to what the Wrangler represents, not only in the marketplace, but for the brand. I mean, when people think Jeep, they immediately think Wrangler. And that is the face of our brand in many ways. I mean, there was a point in time where we used the Wrangler grill as part of our logo. It's instantly recognizable, and it needs to remain that. So we had those elements, but we also know that we needed a modern interpretation. And that meant bringing in some more creature comfort, some technology, some connectivity, some of the safety, improve the efficiency, but there was going to be no compromise to what is really the foundation, and it's the capability and the utility, and that's where it all started, right? To be capable in the utility vehicle. And so I don't believe that not only have we not lost it, we've really improved in all those areas.
So Mark, the characteristics of Jeep are, let me see if I get this right, round headlamps, 7-slot grill, trapezoidal wheel arches.
It's deeper than that, though. Yes, and those are the elements we pull off Wrangler and sprinkle onto other vehicles. But that brings up a good point, the importance of this vehicle to the brand as a whole. Let me explain that. We used to sell, when we just had the two-door, we sold it in the spring and the summer, and it was something that it wasn't the core of the brand at that time. We were going in different directions. The four-door brought to us a whole different customer base. So we're now taking this, we're making the Rubicon, of course, more capable. We're making the Sahara much more luxurious. We're holding on to the base vehicle as well because it's a good entry-level car. But my point with Wrangler is we put a little bit of Wrangler in everything we do. It's our core. It's our base. It's so important to us. And I think for a long time it wasn't as important, but it certainly is now. And without that vehicle, we kind of lose the whole plot. Mm-hmm. And I really do mean it. Every time we build something, and you're listing styling elements, but there's also ideals of Wrangler that we put in a Renegade or a Compass or a Cherokee. That whole off-road thing that we've got to do, that we pump into every car we do. If we don't have that, we're just another brand. So Wrangler, to me, is just so important.
So this is the donor DNA for the other vehicles.
Yeah, and it was never meant to be a brand, mm-hmm. right? It was just, it wore out the horse, and we made this little truck. I think it's an amazing story, the whole, how the brand became what it is now. It's powerhouse now, but from a very humble beginning.
Very much so. Hey, you've done all these really cool Moab concepts. My understanding is you've taken elements from some of those concepts and put them on the new vehicle. Is that right?
Yeah.
What are some of them?
You'll see it in the hood, the way we do the hood, the venting particularly on the Rubicon, which we had on the previous car, but that really came out of the Moab activities. The way the fenders are higher, more clearanced out on the Rubicon. The steel bumpers, we did that on the 10th anniversary, and that really came from our Moab activities. The love for the folding windshield. I've been talking about the folding windshield. But the folding windshield is a great story because manufacturing didn't want it. Engineering hated it. I was told by an engineer, we're never going to do it again. Oh, we proved him wrong. And customers were certainly not asking for it because it was so difficult to put down. But it's such a neat feature that's always been there from day one for shipping. In a world of homogeneous cars, it's cool. We have a folding windshield. Why do I want a folding windshield? If you've never tried it, if you've ridden a motorcycle, ridden a bike, whatever, it's really cool. It doesn't get dirty, and it's just a neat element. We saved it, and I think it's an important piece of the new vehicle. But I like that. I like that it's not, you know, our doors come off, our roof come off, the windshield. I can put a bigger tire on the vehicle right away. We clearanced everything out. We've been thinking about these people. We've been trying it out on cars. And the Moab cars, the other neat thing about the Moab cars is we're out there during Easter Jeep Safari, and I pull up on a group of people that are getting ready to go on a trail ride and stop with some weird thing that I've made. They want to come talk to me. I just got to stand there and listen. It's really great. It's a really good thing.
That's cool.
So, you know, when I look at the door hinges, so the outside door hinges, I mean, I think they look great. I mean, that there's no apology. It's just like, you know, this is real solid gear.
Yes.
I mean, was there any thought ever?
And there's a little. It says T50 on there now. It's stamped into it because that's the tool you need to pull the door off your Wrangler.
Uh huh.
Because I made my guys pull the doors. I'm like, well, what tool do I need? Well, now it's just it's those little details we've been writing down. So,
but was there ever a thought to say, oh, you know, maybe we need to make this look more contemporary?
I learned from my predecessor at some point that they built that. There was a research design property that was built, and I think they were doing YJ or maybe TJ, and they cleaned all that off. They took off all the hinges and locks and latches and all that stuff. They took it to research, and they said people didn't just dislike it. They hated it because it wasn't authentic anymore. It was just kind of anything else. But it was, you know, a different time. Of course, we'd never even think of that now. But so, no, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All that is part of the composition of the car.
Scott, you had to have a list of must-do things. I'd like to know what some of them were. You know, powertrain, you guys are adding to that. Talk a little bit about that and some of the other elements where, I don't know, if you had to go to engineering and manufacturing and design and say, hey, guys, here's what we need.
All of the above. But, yeah, there's always a very long list of requirements that we want for the marketplace to really advance the product forward, but also stay true. So, for example, the power top, I think, is a great example. So Mark mentioned the Sahara. That's really our premium model. You know, you get the body-colored fenders. It's a really clean look, leather interior. But now we can offer that open-air freedom to an individual while they're cruising down the road at 60 miles an hour, open the top and get that full experience, and yet still engineer and design that the rear quarter windows are still fully removable with the doors, with everything else. So you can get the complete same experience essentially, but at the push of a button. So, you know, that's something that you bring a level of functionality that people didn't expect. And even the soft tops that we have on the next generation Wrangler, they're much easier to use. It takes literally a matter of minutes to just take the windows off, drop the top, easily done by yourself. No more zippers, so anyone that's on a Wrangler and remove the zippers, and cold weather especially, they know that it can be a little challenging. So, you know, all those little nuances, and Mark speaks about it from a design standpoint, but there's a lot of enhancements from a functionality and a usability that consumers say, well, it would be nice if my Wrangler could do this, or this was better, or this is difficult. And, yeah, it's an extensive list, and that's exactly what we focused on, what our customers were asking for.
Okay, I got a question from one of my colleagues, Larry Schlackhack, who is a proud owner, he told me, of a Wrangler. He says, ask him about rear seat legroom.
Rear seat legroom. So the next generation Wrangler is actually longer than the previous generation. So we've stretched the wheelbase and we've stretched the overall length of the Wrangler, both two-door and four-door, to accommodate for a little bit better cargo capacity, but also that rear seat room that customers...
He said that's his only complaint, is just not enough
room.
He just
has one complaint?
That's it?
Come on.
Maybe he should drive more instead of be a passenger in the back seat.
We also reclined the back seat, and that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. We added HVAC vents back there, grab handles, a fold-down center console.
And the rear seat back leans back.
Yeah, before, it's very upright in the current Wrangler, and now you've got a little bit more relaxed.
A
lot more relaxed. And so, the armrest in the middle, when it folds down, you have cup holders. Seems so simple, right? But it's really not. It's all those little things that add up to what is a phenomenal product. And
it's
been advanced in so many ways.
Speaking of leaning back, I understand that this is more aerodynamic.
Yes, aerodynamic and Wrangler really don't go together.
So talk about that.
So we tried to sneak the aero in without disrupting too much of the vehicle. You'll see it, of course, in the windshield rake. It's a much faster windshield. Sculpting on the A-pillar, and it doesn't sound like that would make a big deal, but it does, not really so much for aerodynamics as much as it is for just quietness of the car, NVH. Also on the back of the hardtop, you'll see a little spoiler has snuck in to detach the air, and as the roof comes back, it actually leans in a little bit. I didn't want to do a lot. Didn't want to make it very noticeable. The Sport actually sits a little bit lower, and we've covered the front of the front tires on the Sport, and the air dam got a little deeper. But we tried to sneak it in here and there without disrupting the vehicle. I mean, they're opposing goals, aero and off-road. They really are. But I think we did a good job with it. It worked out good.
Scott, too, it's a lighter vehicle, right?
Yes.
Although, is that true in every trim operation or trim line? I heard in some it might actually be heavier.
Well, that'll depend on the content and the option load. But like for like, it's 200 pounds of weight savings that we've been able to get out of the new Wrangler, yes.
Aluminum.
So extensive
I heard
use.
A magnesium tailgate. Is that right?
Yeah, so the inside of the tailgate is a magnesium structure. Strong, but it is wrapped in aluminum as well, along with the hood, the doors, the fenders. So we were able to save a lot of weight through just the body panels changing to aluminum. Furthermore, all new chassis, so of course that means a new frame, so fully boxed frame that's even more rigid than the prior generation, but with the extensive use of high-strength steel that we just didn't have in the previous generation, we were able to save almost 90 pounds out of the frame design alone. So saving that weight allowed us to add additional content and features and a lot of those things that people have been asking for without sacrificing the efficiency piece of it.
You mentioned connectivity earlier. How do you bring new technology in and not tick off people who really want kind of a bare-bones Jeep? And I know this is not bare-bones, but I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I think you have to always bring it to market in a way that's in line with its DNA. So, yes, connectivity is just important in the marketplace today. The previous generation Wrangler was not the most technologically advanced. We didn't have a backup camera, for example. So backup camera is now standard, and so is Bluetooth. But it goes well beyond that. So we have our next generation of Uconnect radios. So what comes along with that is a lot of the connectivity and the technology, like CarPlay, for example. But what it also does is it allows us to bring in a full suite of off-road pages. So this will give that customer and that enthusiast, you know, real-time telemetry, what's going on with their Jeep, the pitch, the roll, the angle, the everything that they want to know real time, see it graphically represented on the screen, and they'll know and they'll become better drivers as a result. So as long as you do it with them in mind, and find that application is how does the technology help the consumer, you know, advance the capability side, but also the convenience side, that's where those two worlds meet.
Mark, for the people that you talk to in terms of developing this, your people, is this their first and only car, or is this a second car that they have in the garage that they take out on the weekends?
Good question.
Thank you.
It used to be, and this is I've been told this several times, when we had the two-door Wrangler only, that it was shopped against number one, a boat, right? Because that was the extra money in the family went to this other vehicle. Now it's a primary car for a lot of people. The four-door brought us that, and also the Sahara brought us that with a lot nicer level of interior. But we've just made the vehicle, the off-road has been easy for us. Making the vehicle work off-road, we got that. It's making it work on-road. That's been the trick. And I think this new vehicle, you guys haven't driven it yet, but talk to me in a couple weeks, I think you'll be a lot happier. So that goes to making it just a more livable vehicle. I like the little fact, 1983 was the first year the doors became standard on this car.
Wow.
A top wasn't standard for a long time. We've come a long way with Wrangler. So, yeah, it used to be just on the farm or it was a play toy. Now it can be a primary vehicle for a lot of people.
And I've told you in the past, outside of going to off-road vehicle parks and the like, the most Rubicons I've seen in any one place, Fifth Avenue in New York.
Oh, yeah.
In Manhattan.
Yeah.
New York with winches and jerry cans. And it was like, what is this about?
Yeah. I don't understand that. I really don't. I know a lot of things about Wrangler, but that I don't understand that at all. I don't understand it, but I get it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Every time we make it look tougher and more off-roady, somehow that works better for us. That's strange. But yeah, it very well can be a primary car.
What I'm getting at is you got a lot of bandwidth with this vehicle.
Absolutely. And we're not, you know, we don't even really talk so much about the Sport, but I think the Sport's important because there's a lot of guys that will get the Sport and they're going to build it into their Rubicon. They're going to build it into whatever they want. And it's always a convertible. Can be a very inexpensive car down at the bottom end.
Did you guys design aftermarket parts for the car?
Good question. You're full of good questions. Yes, our partners at Mopar got in day one, and we're going to launch this car with a full catalog of parts, bumpers, winches, lift kit, which is a big deal, snorkel, tube doors. We've got a car here with all this stuff on it. They want to be the first people you call. So, you know, when you're buying your vehicle, Mopar is right there and ready to add that on. So, yeah.
I noticed this Rubicon behind us has these holes in the doors. Do they sell things you can stick in there?
Not yet, but those...
Why are they there?
Well, good question. We took advantage on the half door, which of course doesn't have a piece of glass that slides down into the door. And off-road, it's nice to have the more openings you have for navigation, the better. So if you're in the driver's seat, you can look through the passenger window and see how close you are to that rock or tree. And it's just unique. It's really cool. There's, of course, a weatherproof plug that goes in there, and I think the aftermarket will be right there.
No idea.
It's Wrangler.
Yeah.
I was stunned to learn that the Wrangler sold in 150 different countries.
Yes.
Were there things, Scott, that you had to look at from a global standpoint and go, yeah, we wanted, no, we can't do that because it won't work in that market?
No, I think first and foremost, we're gonna cater to the home market here in the U.S. But, of course, there is some homologation and some minor changes and differences, but really not altering the vehicle, what it means and stands for here today in the U.S. So from a powertrain perspective, there's some slight differences across the globe, but universally, it's recognizable just like it is here in the U.S. And so there's very, very little changes that anyone would be able to tell from a international versus a U.S. spec.
And what I think is very intriguing is you will only build this vehicle in the United States of America.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to China or Egypt or
It'll be shipped there, but it will not be built there. Right.
But so what I'm getting at is talk a little bit about the importance of this being American-made in those other markets.
Yeah, you know, I think that's even part of the appeal. I mean, first of all, I mean, Toledo's been the home of Wrangler for it's almost the beginnings, right? That's where it all began, too. So it will continue to be the home of Wrangler. But, you know, building it in Toledo, that's part of the history. That's part of the heritage. And I think that when the other markets get it, that's also part of the appeal. They know that this is an authentic American Jeep, too, at the same time. There's a number of I would say, copycats, you know, across the globe, sold under different brands, but there's only one Jeep. And instantly, they know that, yep, it came from Toledo, Ohio. Even across the globe, they know where that Wrangler was built. It's Toledo. They all know Toledo. So it helps keep it on the map, but it's just important for us for a number of reasons. But I think it also helps with the appeal across the globe. Absolutely.
Ferraris come from Italy.
Yeah, that's right. Ferraris come from Italy, Wranglers come from Toledo.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
So as you look across the landscape, I mean, since you've been working on Jeeps of all sizes and shapes and forms, that there's an explosion of every manufacturer seemingly coming out with something that is Jeep-like,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Or maybe that should be Jeep-lite.
Yeah.
Okay. Now my question is...
Flattering.
Does that have an effect on what you guys do?
No.
And I mean,
no.
You know, even for you, Scott.
Maybe for his department.
No, I think we continue to stay the course. I mean, we invented the SUV. We invented the segment. And as we continue to evolve our products and the brand as a whole, yes, it is flattering to an extent. But at the same time, it's not done the way Jeep does it and brings vehicles to market. You know, they still, the capabilities in here, it can't just look capable, it must be capable. So part of the DNA, I think that'll continue to separate us from the competition, but it's clear that there are others that are looking to emulate this and this formula, but there's only been one and there always will only be one Jeep. And
so it's wondering that he's got this big target on his back.
Yes.
He probably doesn't know it. But,
no, he does. We
I'm
all
all right
do.
With that.
We,
I'm all right with that.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. We'll continue to, I think, be a leader in this segment and all the vehicles and all the segments that we compete at. And that's important to as we develop new models.
Mm-hmm. Real good. With that, I'm getting the signal. We're going to have to wrap this up. But I really want to appreciate both of you guys for spending all this time with us. It's been great. I know we only barely scratched the surface, but there will be follow-up.
Okay. We'll see you in Tucson. Yeah.
Mark Allen, Scott Talent, thanks so much for your time today, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. Thank you, sir.
Mark.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back talking about more of the highlights at the LA Auto Show.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location,
driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
All right, Gary and I are back, and we've been joined by two of our colleagues, including Aaron Gold, noted automotive freelance journalist.
So nobody knows what I'm noted for, but yes, I am
noted. We'll get to the bottom of that yet. And Tony Quiroga from Car and Driver Magazine. Or I shouldn't say magazine, right? Because it's way more than
it's
a magazine. Yeah. It's everything these days.
It's still a magazine.
Hey, for good, now. Good. Well, let's talk about what's going on at the LA Auto Show here. Aaron, what was your first reactions?
Well,
the highlights.
Well, oh gosh. And like I said, I feel like I've seen about a third of the show so far. And I was really excited to see the new Wrangler.
And which, okay,
know,
stop
know,
it. We just spent the whole half of the first half of the show talking about the Wrangler.
But I'm really excited about the fact that it still looks like a Wrangler. Everybody's been worried about that. And when I first saw it, my first reaction was, is that the new one? Which, I think this is the one time that an automaker wants that reaction, you know?
Good point. Tony, what are your thoughts?
I'm kind of wowed by the Wrangler, too. It's cool. It's a nice, you know, progression. It hasn't completely altered the formula. They didn't mess with it too much. I'm excited to drive it. The new engine should be cool.
New engines, right?
Yeah, the 2-liter 4 with...
2-liter 4.
With a hybrid assist, isn't it?
That's right.
And then the
diesel. In fact, I heard, I wasn't at the press conference, I heard they've announced a plug-in, too.
Oh, is that right? I didn't
Jeez,
know that.
We should have asked Scott Tallon about that.
I didn't know that.
You need a very long extension cord for when you're out four-wheeling.
Okay, do you guys think that the Wrangler has continued relevance in a market where everything seems to be very non-rectangular as the Wrangler is? I mean, it does.
I think
yes.
so.
People, it's one of those things that just fills people with desire. They want it. We looked at buying a used one a few years back thinking, oh, it's just a used Wrangler. No, it's not priced like other used cars. They're $1 million. People want the things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In a way, it's not, we were discussing earlier off air the Corvette, the new Corvette ZR1, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, when they did the Corvette presentation, it was almost like they ignored the rest of the world. We did not hear the word connected. We did not hear the word autonomous or battery.
No,
we heard
no
the
hybrid
words.
Talk, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing. This is a 755 horsepower car, as if the rest of the world doesn't exist. It's in its own universe, and I think the Wrangler's a lot like that too.
Yeah, and when they switched to four doors, it made it relevant for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, because then people could buy it. People wanted
you're
to buy it.
You're talking about the Wrangler again,
yeah,
not the Corvette.
Not the Corvette.
Yeah,
no.
Four-door Corvette.
Not yet.
It's a mid-engine four-door Corvette.
Station wagon.
Station wagon. Yeah, the shooting brake.
But okay. Yeah, I think its design is why it's a standout. I mean, it's completely unlike everything else, and they continue to make it unlike everything else, and they haven't been tempted to make it like everything else, mm-hmm. So it's created that segment for itself.
So what else you guys see?
I thought the Lincoln Nautilus was kind of a cool design, and, you know, its predecessor...
It's just a new nose.
Yeah, but, I mean, it fits now with the rest of the lineup. They're going back to names... I mean, it sort of worked for me. And the interior is pretty nice, too. And I don't know if you guys have driven the Navigator, but I thought the Navigator had a pretty cool interior, too.
Yeah, no.
They're doing things with Ford products that I guess Lincoln should be doing. I mean, they don't really have their own platform to do things on yet, or maybe never. But
no, I think they will. But they got to make some money for the company first before
exactly.
It's going to say, here's $1 billion.
And they've got to sell more of them outside of southeastern Michigan.
Right.
So I never see them in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
No. You never see
Is this Lincolns in general or just certain
well,
Lincolns?
Well, except for Navigators taking people to the airport, you generally don't see Lincolns in
Southern California. They're used for livery, yeah. And you'll see the MKT very rarely, even as a livery vehicle. But other than that, you never see anything.
Will the new design language change that?
Well, I would hope so. I like the split-wing grille that they were doing, and I didn't like their return to the 70s that they did before. I mean, I agree with you. I drove a Navigator and an Expedition almost back-to-back, and they really are, the differentiation really is quite remarkable. I just wish they would pick one design
and stick to it.
Yep, yes.
I totally agree.
You know, you can't define what a Lincoln is.
Well, you know what the problem is? Every time you appoint a new head of design, that person says, okay, I got to put my look on it, and they throw away what their predecessor did. And they don't have the discipline to go, no, don't touch that.
Right, right. You know, leave it alone for now, yeah.
You know what they're doing that I think is cool as hell? And the Navigator does it, and hopefully they'll do it on the other. I don't know if the Nautilus has it or not. The stuff it does when you approach it with the proximity key, the lights go on,
right,
the headlights
yeah.
spread.
It gives you the puddle light.
The puddle lights come on, and the running board, which my wife calls the princess step, which she stopped making fun of when we had a power wagon that didn't have one, and all of us fell out of the car at least twice during the week. But the princess step comes down all before you unlock it.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, in a market that I think values the idea of something being bespoke and customized service and all that, I think that's a really smart move.
In fact, they've taken it to another level with the Nautilus. So the LED lights don't just come on. They sort of come on sequentially.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, what they've talked about is the car greeting you.
Right.
I'm a sucker for sequential
itself.
Lights. Yeah. You know, like the old Cougar turn signals.
Right,
that's
right.
Right.
The Mustang turn
Mustang
signals.
Yes. Right.
When I drive a Mustang, I feel like it's my civic duty to use the turn signals as much as possible. Yeah. No, more than usual. I'll signal everything. If I'm going to go around a piece of chewing gum, I'd boo-doo-doo, boo-doo-doo, boo-doo-doo.
Signal out of the driveway.
I signal out of the driveway. I signal everywhere, yes.
So Nissan showed a new small entry crossover, the Kicks.
The Kicks.
Kicks. Not like the cereal, though.
That's right.
No. So I just thought that they couldn't call it the Rogue Kicks.
So how finely is this category going to be sliced?
Well, I asked years ago, I understand I'm not nearly as sophisticated as anybody at this table, but years ago I asked the same question of Ford when they were starting to do multiple SUVs. And I asked why so many vehicles in the same general size class. And he said, you know, we have an answer for every question. Oh, you don't like the Explorer? We have the Edge, which is a little sportier. Oh, you need more space? We have the Flex. They never have a reason to leave the showroom. And one of the things he said, now that we're sharing platform components, we no longer have to build 300,000 of them to make a profit. So if the vehicles are closely related, and I'm assuming they're as closely related as the Rogue and the Rogue Sport, why not slice and dice it? It seems like a good opportunity if it doesn't cost you a lot more to be able to say to a buyer, oh, that's not right for you. Well, here, this is right in the middle.
Do you agree, Gary? Because to me, man, this market is getting sliced.
Yeah, I just think that there's... You know, and the problem is that when you get these very close variations, that when you go into the showroom, the guy's going to sell you the bigger one anyway.
Right.
Because the car
money.
Payment
That's
is
true.
Going to be, you know, oh, it's only going to cost you $3 more a month. Why not
take
this one?
Well, you know, I went to the Mitsubishi launch. They showed the Eclipse Cross. And my first thought was, oh, is this... Because I'm a responsible freelancer, I didn't read the press kit. Yeah, I'm like, oh, they're going to get rid of the Sport.
No,
they're not. It's going to go right in between the Sport and...
That one seems to me like they're slicing the bologna a little thin there. But, I mean, that's a replacement for the Juke. And this has...
The Kicks, you mean.
Yes, exactly. The Kicks is a replacement for the Juke. So the Kicks is a lot more mass market appeal than the Juke.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
I heard it wasn't a replacement for the
not?
Juke.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Okay, then they're slicing the bologna pretty thin, because I thought that was a replacement for the Juke.
Someone told me that it wasn't.
Okay.
And so...
It was my understanding.
The guy could have been lying to me, though. So just want you
they
to
were
know.
Lying to somebody,
I could
that's for
be
sure.
Wrong.
I'm surprised about that.
Wait a minute. You can't be wrong. You can't be on the show if you're wrong.
So can we edit out the part where he named his publication in case he was wrong? If what they're saying is true and they can build it profitably, why not have a bunch of alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep people in the showroom.
Yeah. So Hyundai came out with the Kona, which is their smaller crossover utility. And now this is a new platform. So, I mean, they
love that thing. You know why I love it? Now I'm going to name drop a show. I saw it in Frankfurt. I love it because it's like the South, it's the Korean Citroen. It has so many. It's like a Citroen cactus.
Yeah, I can see that.
Love
that's
it. And
point.
And guess what?
The cactus ain't selling.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah. When it's a little too weird, even for the French. But you know, my thing is, I'm one of the few people who like the Juke. I'm so tired of cars that look the same. Just give me something different. And by the way, I drove a Juke into Canada to have dinner with a friend of mine, and I came back over the border very late at night at Niagara Falls. What's your citizenship? American. What's with the manufacturer plate? Nissan owns the car. Why is your car so friggin' ugly? That was the question that customs asked me about the Juke.
See, to me, the Juke was quirky enough that I actually liked it. You know, unlike the Cube,
which was just bizarre.
Bizarre, right.
Yeah. See, I liked the Cube, but the Cube disappointed me because it was too conventional inside. I thought it was a letdown.
You didn't like that little rug, that little round rug on the top of the dash?
As soon as I looked back and saw that the wraparound glass didn't wrap around and there was a big pillar, it was like when I was a child and discovered, well, grew up Jewish, so I knew there was no Santa Claus, but that my parents were putting money under my pillow for the tooth fairy. It was the biggest disappointment. What do you mean it doesn't wrap around? Oh.
All right, so what else? Mercedes has a new CLS.
Yeah. And then I hadn't seen the Project One. You've probably seen the Project One already.
Yeah.
But it's a big car. The supercar?
Massive.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Because he was in Frankfurt.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, but I went to Frankfurt. I climbed the million steps. I paid my dues in the million steps of the Mitsubishi or the Mercedes pavilion. Yeah, with a 1.6-liter engine that revs to 11,000 RPM.
All the Formula One stuff. Yeah.
And doesn't have to be rebuilt like every 5 minutes or something like that.
I don't know. No one will ever drive it, will they?
The large carbon fiber shark wing sort of bothers me.
But I didn't
think
it was particularly pretty. Yeah, it's not. Just, it's like the forms are sort of like soft and doughy, and the car's gigantic. Mm-hmm. And then it has this, you know, affectation on the roof, which is functional, but I don't know. I was hoping to be more wowed by that car.
Okay, but what about the CLS, which would be a car that perhaps you might buy?
Well, I liked it. I thought it was pretty. When they set a new design direction for Mercedes, I thought we were going to see something a little bit more radical. I mean, it looks familiar. I like the front end. They've lowered it. They've made it more aggressive, more like the AMG GTs. You know, I'm kind of disappointed. A lot of their cars, they have that big rectangular screen. It's a double screen for dash and center display. And it's just a big rectangular screen.
Yeah, it's just a couple of iPads.
Yeah.
Well, that's how the E-Class is, too.
Yeah.
And it shares a lot of the interior with that car.
I was really disappointed in that. The vents go from red to green. We need to change temperature. Okay. But, you know, radical new design. But going, well, that's out of the S, that's out of the E. I love the outside of it, and I know that's why it'll sell. I don't like that big
screen. Well, they sort of invented that whole, let's call everything a coupe.
Yeah.
You know, back in 05, when the first CLS came out. And they're sort of stuck with that, you know, with that silhouette. And basically, they're just adorning the silhouette at this point.
They've got two different grills to it, too. And on one of them that they had, it was like this Mercedes three-star, you know, three-pointed star. But it was set in something that, to my eye, looked like, I don't know, cheap. It just didn't work.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say cheese. And I was going to say, yes, they've set it in cheese. And for an upcharge, you can get cheddar or, you know.
But the big news is the new engine with that car, the new inline six family, which replaces the old V6s. So that'll trickle in as four cylinders, and that'll trickle in as all six cylinders too.
I've always liked inline sixes.
Yeah,
Everybody's
yeah.
always liked yes. inline sixes.
I was so surprised to see that come back. I'm looking at the slide, going, is that the four? Is that one, two? I'm trying to count cylinders. Yeah, that's really neat.
Well, the last generation, they needed to have an eight, so they thought, well, we'll make a six and an eight. And now they need fours and sixes, so and make the four out of the same family as the six, you get an inline six.
I would think with where packaging is going, well, with packaging for aerodynamics, a compact engine makes sense. But I suppose now that everybody's trying to raise their hoods for pedestrian protection, I suppose you know, have a little room under the hood to play with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't look under the hood. I haven't seen the engine, so maybe it's a slant six, like a old Chrysler engine.
Oh, that would make me happy. Yes, and when you turn the key, there's no button, there's a key, and it goes, no, 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 just like an old
and
slant six.
And it dies six. Going around corners.
Yeah, yes. That was my first old car.
Okay, BMW, you guys wander over there and see the i8 Roadster.
i8 convertible, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
something.
It's beautiful. I don't know if it's going to do anything for them from a sales standpoint.
No, right.
They can't sell the
dress.
I suppose. Yeah, that's right. Because that's one of the hardest cars to get into in the world. Yeah.
And out.
Yeah.
But even it's the high sill that makes it difficult. It's
but now
not,
you can just climb in.
Yeah.
It's stand
up. You don't have to.
Yeah. You can do a Bo and Luke Duke slide across the hood and just go right over the right over the top. That's what I would do.
But yeah, I don't think that's going to make that much of a dent. I didn't see the top go up and down either. I was curious to see how that worked, how it tucks away. And
right. No, I haven't seen that either.
And they have the M3, the sedan, the CS sedan, which is more power in an M3, so no big shocker there.
Excellent. Surprise, surprise.
I think that's probably the last iteration before, the next M3 comes or the next 3 Series hits.
I thought was kind of interesting, it's a very subtle thing. So Porsche launched the 911T,
right.
Carrera T, the purest Porsche, the 42nd vehicle in the series of 911s. And all their videos showed people shifting gears. And there seems to be a trend, Porsche led the charge, I think, to twin clutch transmissions because they're superior. But now there's this trend towards going back towards manuals. And they use the word purist a lot. I mean, again, a good way to sell a car which has less stuff and costs more money.
Right.
But which kind of what
Porsche knows how to do that, for sure.
Yeah, they do that better than anybody. But that idea that they're getting away from the technology and now starting to try to advertise themselves more as a brand for purists.
Right.
You know, and they said there's a demand for this.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I think 911R, which was the super expensive 911 that they made 911 of, and that only came in a manual, and it was basically the GT3 RS. And the GT3 RS was only in a PDK in the dual clutch. And now this second generation of the GT3 in the 991 is, you can get a manual because of that. And so they sort of proved to themselves, there's a market for this. We can push this. We can sell these cars.
Don't you think it was hurting their brand to go away from a manual? Brand image.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Porsche customer's expectation is. I think they usually, I mean, at least in Los Angeles, they're all automatics.
That's true. So. I mean, let's face it. The PDK is better.
Yeah. Right?
The manual is more fun.
Exactly, and that's what I'm getting at. Is yeah. I think amongst a lot of the hardcore enthusiasts, it was like, I don't like the way this world's going, and I don't like the fact that Porsche doesn't have a manual.
Yeah, and all the supercars, you know, and all the hypercars, you can't get a manual. You haven't been able to get a manual for a decade, so...
Maybe that will change back. That would be kind of...
So
hey,
that
some
that
magazine should run a Save the Manuals campaign.
You're right.
Wow, what a good idea.
Good idea.
So Bollinger was here, and I saw you over at that stand. This is the electric rectangular Jeep.
Yeah, it looks
vehicle.
Like an old Land Rover Discovery.
I love that thing. As people discover the advantages of electrification, because I think electric cars were unfairly, you know, kind of pigeonholed as you know, glorified golf carts. And much as I love to complain about them, Tesla has helped change that image. But electricity makes a lot of sense for serious off-roading. You know, now most off-roaders have a planetary automatic, which is not a great choice. I think a manual is a little bit better. But an electric off-roader, if you really want to get from point A to point B with no roads, makes a great deal of sense. I'm really eager to try that thing. I tried to sell a story to one of my off-road clients, and they didn't want it. I'm so disappointed, you know? Wasn't car and driver, by the way, but I'm available. Well, notable freelancer.
But when you get to point B, will there be electricity there for you to be able to plug into?
Yeah, that's the thing, is A to B has to be very, very short.
Yes.
But, you know, I think as battery technology changes, weight's not that much of a factor when you're going that slow.
And a lot of off-roading is super slow, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like a city crawl, basically, a city traffic crawl.
And then you have a little crank of that thing, and you have to sit there for 4 hours, like that scene in Breaking Bad when they had to hand crank the generator to go where you're going.
What I like about the Bollinger is that very simple approach to the fabrication. I mean, they fabricate this thing, right? There's no stampings that are needed. Maybe just stamp out blanks, and then they can shape it. So if you look through the whole vehicle, it has a lot of very clever approaches to keeping costs down. Sliding windows, not rolling up and down windows. I don't know if you noticed the HVAC. You have these sort of cylindrical things that sit on top of the IP at the bottom of the windshield. So you can turn it one way to blow air on the windshield or crank it the other way to blow on you. And there's three of them, so you can do both. And stuff like that. What I want to know is, what's it going to cost? They won't say.
$1 million. That's my prediction.
Chris Bangle has his Red Space vehicle here. Did you guys take a look at that?
No, I didn't make it over to that corner.
I only got a glance at it. And
I got a look at it, and to me it looks like the car that should have been on Pee-wee's Playhouse. It is the goofiest. I'm telling you.
It
is whimsical beyond belief.
And what's the plan for it?
I have no idea. None whatsoever. I don't see...
Return to Pee-wee.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul Rubens is
going
back
to appeal to a very small slice of the public.
I got
to
check that out. Yeah. I missed that.
So Mitsubishi's thing is like, Mitsubishi is back.
Are they?
Apparently they are. Which to me is a very, very interesting
concept.
Well, they're
standard carpet, which is a big plus.
Yeah, I was going to say, the booth has gotten nicer. The location is not as bad. I remember at the New York Auto Show, they were in the very least expensive booth all the way at the end. The car looks nice, and they've so gotten away from all the things they did well. Their all-wheel drive system is pretty amazing. and they don't get credit for that. And the sports cars, back when they made them, were wonderful.
Yeah, it was a technological, you know, every single Mitsubishi had some technology in it that was advanced and at the cutting edge.
But that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Have to say, I do think the all-wheel drive system is still pretty good. You know, but I'm looking, okay, how much pebbly plastic? And when they showed an interior shot, they listed 7 or 8 things that the car will have, which basically bring them up to the 2000s. The 2010s, mind you, but the 2000s. But, like, heated seats were one of them. And they showed the switches. I'm like, oh, nice switch, but pebbly plastic around it. So it's still pebbly plastic, but it's a nicer design.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. You know, and it's always funny when they say sales are up 75% from 2 cars. We sold 4. But
well, so many of those cars sell on price right now. All the Mitsubishi showrooms are kept alive by, you know, deals.
Yes, exactly.
So I don't know if that's going to change with this... What is it called?
23, the Eclipse Cross.
The Eclipse Cross.
24 grand, I think. Yeah. Entry price, which is not bad. I mean, if you can go in and get a nice one for 26, I want them to do well.
Yeah.
Eclipse was.
That's why I couldn't remember the name, because it makes no sense to me, at least.
Well, you know, I'm sure they're banking on the fact that it's a name the public's going to remember and associate it with Mitsubishi.
Right.
So
exactly.
Why not use it?
But
who cares if it was honest?
But guys my age are going to remember. That's the problem. And we're generally supposed to be past little crossover buying age, although I'm not. I just bought my first car made after the year 2000. So, I want them to do well. I don't know why. I love the underdog.
You are.
It's how I am. Oh.
Toyota introduced the new version of the RX 350.
So yeah, the long one. The
RXL.
Well, there's both. There's now a 2-row and a 3-row. Any reactions to that?
I haven't seen it.
No.
See, I think that one of the characteristics of the original RX has always been the roof line and the way that it came back. Mm-hmm. With the new one, you basically look at the roof line and it's straight and then it goes down. It just doesn't look like the RX to me anymore. And you know, now they've got this big, you know, spindle grille on the front, which doesn't help things. But you know, my understanding is that, you know, Lexus dealers have been basically saying, you know, we want a 3-row vehicle. But wasn't the GX a 3-row vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, a traditional truck SUV, you know,
right.
It was body on frame.
Not a very roomy 3-row vehicle.
But not a very fuel efficient or interesting or fun, nice to drive. You know. And it was expensive, too. It was more expensive than the RX.
And aren't they coming out with a 2-row version?
No, the 2-row version is the version. So,
of the 350.
And then there's the 350L. Yeah.
Right.
Which is the longer one.
Right.
No, I mean, what's the next one up? 450?
Well, that's just powertrain.
Yeah, there's RX, and then the next up would be GX or LX.
Okay.
Well, LX is a Land Cruiser, I think.
Yeah, and GX is 4Runner.
This is the type of quality journalism you can find. Trust
this
us,
is,
we are car experts. Yeah, we know this stuff.
This is why Lincoln's gone to Nautilus and is jumping, dropping all those letters.
The Lincoln thing, I don't have the objection to letters and numbers that everybody else has. I understand. Either you emphasize, you build the brand name, or you build the model name. Because people will say, I drive a Lexus. People who have a Honda will say, I drive an Accord, I drive a Civic, right? It's where you want. But the Lincoln names were so similar, you know?
Yeah.
And then Finney comes along and goes,
difference.
Well, let's just call everything Q. Oh, well, that solves everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm happy to have a name. And Nautilus is kind of a cool name.
It is cool. I'm surprised it wasn't taken. You know, I'm surprised somebody hadn't named something the Nautilus. I was also surprised nobody had named anything the Atlas before the Atlas, but that's, you know, last year's news.
I guess there was no Atlas before.
No, which is a great, strong name.
I would imagine a lot of corporate boardrooms. Nice. I say a lot of corporate boardroom meetings where they say, no, it sinks and Nemo was a jerk. So that's the end of that. But but other than that, Nautilus, I think, is a really nice name. And it kind of works with Lincoln. I don't know why. It has a nice sound to it.
Yeah, I agree. I like the name. I'm interested to see what they're going to call the rest of the things.
Nautilus W.
Nautilus X.
Nautilove.
I'm predicting MKC becomes the Aviator.
Oh, that'd be cool. I like the Aviator.
Yeah,
name. I always
love
thought that
Aviator.
Was a good name.
And the Aviator, and that thing was, I love that thing. It was a miniature Navigator, and it was fast at the time. I remember I had one with a V8. I missed the Aviator. And it comes
your
with
dreams,
sunglasses.
Your dreams may come true.
My needs
Maybe
are very
a Lincoln
simple.
Showroom very soon.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So the North American Car and Truck of the Year finalists were introduced or announced today. And you guys all had something to do with that.
Just a little bit, yes. One of our fellow journalists, Frank Algifer, predicted the car finishers.
So these.
Oh, so wow. Did I.
This was Accord, Camry, and Kia Stinger.
Yep.
That's right.
And the...
Utilities.
Utility is Stelvio.
XC60, the Volvo.
XC60, and Honda Odyssey.
And the Odyssey, yeah.
Right.
And then the... Well,
the third category that only had three entries, and the three finalists were...
The Colorado ZR2, the Lincoln
Navigator,
and the Ford Expedition.
I have one of those Expeditions downstairs in the way overpriced parking garage. I would have taken the train had I known how expensive parking would be. I really like that Expedition. I didn't expect to, but that's right up my alley. It's got the magic trailer backup towing thing, which we have used and is wonderful. It's you turn the dial and it steers the trailer. It makes the car go whichever way. And I thought I would hate it. I saw it and I went, well, I can back up a trailer. But when you back up a trailer, you get everything lined up, you're going straight back those three vehicle lanes, and then the trailer always winds up about 8 inches to the left of where you wanted it to be. This thing, it's perfect. We had it in an F-150. I backed into the spot like 9 times. I loved it, and I'm pleased to see that. And I didn't necessarily agree with those vehicles being in the SUV category, or truck category rather, because I see them as SUVs. But now I'm looking at that going, you know, this kind of does blend some of the pickup truck functionality.
Right.
It's we own a truck and we actually tow
different.
With it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can almost kind of see it a bit.
So were you guys surprised at all for the cars?
A Camry surprised me a little bit. I didn't love the Camry, I guess, as much as everybody else. I thought it was a better Camry, but I didn't think it was anywhere near as good as Accord. And if I was picking between the two, which I sort of did, I picked the Accord.
I was in the same boat. I mean, I agree. I think Camry's an excellent Camry, but the Accord is just such a well-done product. I was surprised. I'm happy for Toyota, but I was surprised it made it to the finals. I didn't think it would.
And Stinger?
Stinger didn't surprise me at all because I've been listening to our fellow jurors and they've been raving about the car. Personally, I think it's a terrific car. I just don't think it's going to sell very well.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. So that's the only issue I have with the car.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, I one can wonder about that. On the other hand, you know, Kia did so well essentially and Hyundai building what are essentially cut-rate Toyotas. And now it's basically kind of a cut-rate Audi. I mean, the car is really
good.
Even
the stand looks like it could be the Audi stand here.
Yeah. And, you know, when they did an event for the jurors, and they had a bunch of German cars and the Stinger and said drive them back-to-back. And the Stinger held its own. I debate because there's a difference between a really good car and a really good Kia. I mean, it is the most amazing Kia ever. But it's a real accomplishment, especially considering they couldn't seem to get their steering and their suspension sorted out for years.
I mean, but is that the way forward, do you think, to build brand equity is to build a sports sedan? Is that still relevant today? Or do you have to build SUVs to be...
You got
to
go where the market is. If
you
want to
sell
vehicles, you got to go to where the market is, and it's not in sports
sedans.
It's
not in sports sedans.
I disagree. Well, there's selling vehicles, and then there's building a brand reputation. I mean, at the end of the line, people have to say, I want to drive a blank. I mean, we started out talking about the Wrangler, the most irrelevant vehicle in the universe. I mean, a great off-roader. The current version, useless for everything else, but everybody wants them, you know, because of what it is. And if Kia can build that level of desire... Yeah. Then you sell more SUVs.
Hey, my producer's giving us the high sign. The batteries in the camera are going to die. So we're going to have to wrap this up. But anyway, Tony Quiroga, great having you here.
Thank
Aaron
you,
Gold, always
Thank
fun
you,
to have you around,
Thank
too.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Gary, this has been a great
that
show.
Gary, and, not so much fun for you. But
And next week we'll be back in the studio, but we want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.